Making Contact receives almost all of our support from listeners like you. Please log on to radioproject.org to make a tax-deductible donation and support our work. Thanks and enjoy.
Thank you all so much for coming out here tonight and this amazing crowd, and to the Mobilization for Climate Justice West for organizing this event. Going to do a couple show and tells. This is oil from the BP oil spill from the Macondo well. Can anyone say, can you see from there what it looks like in this bag? Say it louder. Yeah, it's exactly what it looks like. This is from a beach in Mobile, Alabama. But you have to imagine that the oil is all along the coast, right? It's in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, where am I forgetting? Texas, Florida, Texas. I didn't say Louisiana? Louisiana. Okay. And it washes up in all kinds of different ways, right? It washes up in the ocean as oil mixed with dispersants, so it looks like these long streaks that you see. Sometimes it flows in clumps. It's on the beach sometimes as a heavy sheen of oil, just a thick layer of oil. Sometimes it's these balls, these tar balls of oil in clumps. And it's all over and it's everywhere. And when I first walked on the beach and the first time I was on an oiled beach in Alabama, I thought I was looking at bark. You know when bark comes in after a wave and there's all this wood everywhere? And I was walking along and I thought I saw the bark, and as I looked closer and bent down, I touched it, and it's oil, and it's thick, and you have to break it, and it leaves a brown stain on your hand, and it looks like shit. And it's BP and the oil industry literally shitting on the beaches with each wave that comes in. The wave comes in, people come in and clean it up. The next wave comes in, the oil comes back in, shits on the beach, people come in and clean it up. And over and over and over and over. And when I talked to many BP workers, they said, you know, I'm going to be doing this until 2014. And that's a conservative estimate for how long they're going to be going on these beaches. So I just got back from my second trip down. I'm leaving again tomorrow to go back to the Gulf. I've had the incredible privilege of working with a network of groups that I met and have been organizing with through the Chevron program, now working with on BP. And one message I hope to leave you with tonight is this is not about BP. This is about the oil industry. This was an event that was bound to happen, expected to happen, predicted to happen, and happened. All of the oil companies that operate in the Gulf, let me show you this. This is the cover of our alternative annual report for Chevron. And just by the way, these are expensive to print, which is why they're 10 bucks. They're free online, download them, print them. Or if print is what you need, please take one and you don't have $10. We're just trying to recoup the expenses. I'm the editor. This was written by communities all across the world, all across the country, impacted by Chevron. The cover image is an oil spill, a Chevron oil spill, in a national wildlife preserve off the coast of Louisiana that happened 2 weeks before the BP explosion. This is a Chevron oil pipeline that was severed and leaked a mere 84,000 gallons of oil into the ocean. Sounded like a lot at the time. This is happening more and more and more because the oil industry and its intense contribution to climate change and its operations in the Gulf accentuate and exaggerate and lead to coastal erosion. Coastal erosion is problematic for lots of reasons, but one of them is that it exposes more and more all the infrastructure of the oil industry. So oil pipelines, and the Gulf Coast isn't just oil rigs, marshes, wildlife, national wildlife preserves, and beaches. It is miles and miles and miles of oil infrastructure, canals, pipelines, arteries that carry the oil from the reservoirs in the ocean to the land. And those pipelines, those arteries, are being ever more exposed, and they're being severed constantly. And that is what happened here. Chevron's the largest leaseholder in the Gulf. The cover of Chevron's annual report this year is their glistening new transocean operated rig operating out in the Gulf in the same waters as the BP spill. It was BP that was operating, it was Transocean that was operating the Deepwater Horizon, BP's rig. Transocean operates the vast majority of rigs out in the Gulf. They also have one of the worst safety records of any company. And all of the oil companies use Transocean, and all of the oil companies used that same safety preparedness report that BP used for what would happen if they had an accident out in the Gulf. That report was the one that Rose cited that said things like what they would do if there was an oil spill in the Gulf to protect walruses and polar bears. What that means is that they cut and pasted it from their Arctic report, right? They also had scientific experts in there who would come in and deal with the oil spill. One of those experts died in 2005. This isn't funny. And he was cited in their 2009 preparedness report. There was also a link for the company, one of the companies that would come in and help with the cleanup. That link goes to an Asian supermarket. All of the companies operating in the Gulf use the identical plan. The reason why this happened is because the oil industry has moved further and further out, has become more and more desperate for oil, right? Their value as companies comes most importantly from the amount of oil reserves they have, what they can book as their own. There's less and less oil in the world. More of it is controlled by governments who you have to go to war to get it back from, and of course we're doing that. Most of it is also moving into more difficult to get to places where it's more expensive to get to it, more environmentally destructive, socially, human rights, places like the tar sands in Alberta and deep offshore. Deep offshore drilling is a relatively new phenomena, and particularly deep offshore drilling in the Gulf. Rose showed you all of those the operations inside of the thousands of rigs that are, or platforms that are in the Gulf of Mexico. Or just actually to make sure that we all know this, why this is all in the Gulf of Mexico, we have moratoriums. We had moratoriums. In 1969, there was a UNICAL blowout off the coast of Santa Barbara. Chevron now owns UNICAL. That blowout happened in Santa Barbara where there was an organized environmental movement. That movement took action right away, started organizing, had already said that offshore drilling wasn't safe, and suddenly their voice was very, very, very loud. More people listened, more people organized. That organizing led to the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency, and ultimately a moratorium on offshore drilling off the coast of California, off the Atlantic, off the Pacific, and parts of Alaska. It was allowed to continue in the Gulf. The vast majority of Gulf production still takes place from shallow platforms. There's hundreds and thousands of them. Many of them have just been abandoned. They're leaking. They're dangerous. And they get left behind. But that's still the majority of the operations. But the vast majority of production now comes from the deep wells. So 1,000 is a deep well, 5,000 is ultra deep. This one was at 5,000 feet, but that's 5,000 from the ocean surface to the ocean floor. The reservoir total is 18,500 feet. BP has drilled the deepest offshore reservoir anywhere in the world, just out past the Macondo well, 35,000 feet down. That's as far down as Mount Everest is up. As they're pushing out into these horizons, they're finding big reservoirs. Now, Rose said that reservoir would only feed the U.S. for 5 days. We consume an enormous amount of oil. That's an enormous reservoir. It's an enormous reservoir. Right now, what we have from that reservoir is a leak. I don't refer to it as a gusher. It's a leak. It's a leak from a pipe. If that pipe bursts, if there's a hole that pops up somewhere else, we will have a gusher. And that is an enormous reservoir. And that's why they went out there. And that's why they went out further. Now, they were allowed to go out there without proper oversight, without enforcement, because of the wedding of the oil industry to the government. And, you know, 3 weeks before, what happened, the Bush administration eliminated the moratoriums on offshore drilling off the Pacific and off the Atlantic. The Obama administration implemented it in the Pacific, and that's the graphic that, I'm sorry, in the Atlantic, and that's the graphic that we saw, put in place the plan to start the drilling. And that was 3 weeks before the blowout. So that's why immediately after the blowout, Obama took a step back and let BP go forward. Because think if Obama had immediately done what he should have done, which was to nationalize everything, it would have been such an immediate admittance of how wrong he was 3 weeks prior to say, we can trust the oil industry, they're great. Obviously, we couldn't and we shouldn't have. What should have happened and what didn't happen and what needs to happen, and I'm going to transition to the local groups, which is what I'm supposed to be talking about. What needed to happen is that what BP is concerned about, most concerned about, and has been from the beginning, and the one thing they've done really, really well, actually, even though all of the devices have failed, is they're really concerned about stopping the spill, because that's the one place where they are absolutely, completely, totally liable. For every barrel that leaks, they're gonna have to pay $4,300. And they need to stop that leak, because they're gonna have to pay that money. And the 76 million, I wish the left would stop being so obsessed with this cap. It's not gonna hold. All they have to do is found negligent. They've already been found negligent. They're gonna pay more than that, and we have so many other more important things to worry about. They're gonna pay more than that 76 million. We have so many more regulations and problems to be concerned about. They're gonna pay a lot, and they're probably gonna pay a lot more. But they're obsessed with getting the spill stopped. What they don't care about at all is everything that happens after that. They don't care at all about once the oil hits the water. They do care about making it look less bad, which is why they're using the dispersants. It makes it look not as bad, so that there's less public pressure. There's no other reason to use the dispersants. So one of the deep concerns of the local communities, and what I was incredibly impressed with everywhere I went, all along the Gulf, was the incredible resilience of the amazing organizing of local groups. The federal government has failed. The one thing the federal government has done well, because the Coast Guard is in charge of BP at the site of the spill, is monitor that. That's been pretty good. Everything else after that, there's nobody in charge of. It's pure chaos. There's fighting between the states. 5 states are impacted, right? Florida, Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama. Each governor is dealing with it in a different way. Each state agency is dealing with it in a different way. The federal agencies are fighting with the state agencies, are fighting with BP. There's nobody in charge. And that, what that ultimately creates is deep concern out of the same thing that BP is most concerned about, and that's liability. So you've got state governments that won't spend money on things because they're afraid that BP won't reimburse them. So what I heard time and time again from the local groups was that this spill could have and should have been able to be contained at the source. While BP was obsessed with shutting down the spill, at the source, what should have happened right away was every oil corporation in sight should have sent everything it had there, every state should have sent everything it had, the federal government should have sent everything it had, and we should have been able to hold the oil there. And we could have, but we didn't. So now the question is how to deal with the fact that we have all of this. So the dispersant is a toxin. All it does is make it much, much, much more difficult to clean up the mess. So the one thing that you can do with oil, and just remember after Exxon Valdez, only 11% of the oil has ever been cleaned up, only 11%. What you can do is gather it up like a glop. This is when you can gather it up, right? I've got it in a bag. I've been carrying it in a Ziploc bag. What you can't do is pick it up in a Ziploc bag when it's been dispersed, right? So what you want is to keep it together so that you can at least try and scoop it up. You don't want to burn it. You don't want to spray dispersant on it. And you want to try and collect it. What the local groups have been dealing with, and one of the biggest failures of the state government and the federal government, is the health consequences. So what's happening is that we're now experiencing, as opposed to short-term exposure to toxin, and remember, the oil is a toxin and the dispersant is a toxin. And it's not only in the water, it becomes an aerosol. So it's lifting up off the ocean and it's collecting together, and then it goes everywhere. So the workers are being exposed, but also every single person who lives in a coastal community is exposed. And this is now not short-term exposure, it's long-term exposure. So what they are experiencing is what everyone who lives near an oil refinery experiences. It is long-term respiratory heart exposure and consequences, cancer. Most at risk are small children, pregnant women, the elderly. The only people who are doing briefings on this topic are the community groups. So one of the best local community groups, the Louisiana Environmental Action Network, LEAN, an incredible woman named Wilma Subra, who's a toxicologist, has been independently going around to doctors explaining when people show up at your hospital, this is what it means that they're having these problems. Going to communities and saying, when you're having these problems, this is why. She's the person doing it. There's now discussion, you know, among many people with children and pregnant women, you know, that they need to leave the exposure zone. But what Wilma's doing is emblematic of groups like Mobile Bay Keepers, groups all across the coast, all the way to Texas, Texas Environmental Justice Advocacy Services, who are doing community organizing. And what's amazing is that networks were born post-Katrina. The first word on everybody's lips is Katrina, still. Networks were born post-Katrina that link community groups all along the coast. And they are doing the organizing, the advocacy, the education, the enforcement, calling on communities and community groups to stand up together to demand of state government and federal government that they create change. And that organizing and that advocacy is powerful and is there. However, they need our support. They need our financial support, our organizing support, our keeping the spotlight on. Because of this cap, and we can talk about the cap in questions, mainstream media is starting to leave. The spotlight's already starting to leave, and they need our help in maintaining the spotlight so that the policies that need to be put in place will be put in place. The money that needs to get to them will get to them. The policy changes that need to happen will happen. That we don't have cosmetic fixes in policy, but we have long-term policy change. The call for a permanent moratorium, which needs to be implemented in the Gulf, in the Pacific, in the Atlantic, isn't going to be able to come from those states. It's too difficult for it to come from those states. It has to come from out here. If it isn't going to come from California, it's not going to come from anywhere. The calls for permanent breaking up of the oil industry, of separation of oil and state, I have to stop, but really quickly, one of the rumors that's now flying is Exxon and Chevron are talking about either purchasing BP outright, which I don't see as incredibly likely, but most certainly purchasing large BP assets, which means that they would become even bigger, even more powerful. BP is the largest oil producer and natural gas producer in the United States. If those assets were purchased by Exxon or Chevron, that would be deeply problematic. And by Chevron, for us, Chevron's the largest oil company in California, the most powerful corporation in California, the second largest oil corporation in the United States, the fifth largest corporation on the planet. If they became bigger, that would be very problematic for us locally and as a state, but also it would obviously be very problematic nationally and internationally. So they need our attention, our organizing, and our support. So fortunately, the Mobilization for Climate Justice is here to help us do that. Global Exchange is here to help us do that. I hope in my continued trips down to the Gulf, I can continue to bring information and linkages and activism. And thank you all for being here. Look forward to your questions.